Good morning. Welcome back to Condo Freeze and HOAs. We're here each Sunday at 11 a.m. on 850 WFTL in South Florida. I'm Karen Curtis, and I'm here again today with attorney Eric Glazer from Glazer & Sachs, PA. Eric, board certified by the Florida Bar and Condominium and Plan Development Law. His firm has attorneys in Fort Lauderdale and Orlando, and we are here each week to answer all your calls and emails about the issues that make life in your condominium or HOA absolutely crazy from 1 minute to the next, and we'd love to get the phone lines going early, answering all of your condo and HOA questions, no matter where you are in the state. Give us a call right here in the studio, 877-850-8585. Again, that's 877-850-8585. Or if you prefer to email your questions, you can do so by visiting the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com and by clicking on the email of the show tab. And Eric.
All right. Yes.
You're on the phone.
Hey, you know this today reminds me of the saying by the post office, neither rain nor sleet nor snow?
Yes.
Well, today, how about neither electric or having access to an office will prevent us from doing the Condo Craze and HOA's radio show.
Oh, good right? for you.
Got to the office today, no electric. So I'm doing the show from home. Pretty interesting, huh?
There's only 8 customers without power, and you're one of them?
And we're one of them. That's just the way luck has been going this year.
That weather blew down the line.
Home, right? Yeah. Hey, if you're a fan of the show and like to read our blogs and newsletters, of course, make sure to go to our website, condocrazeandhoas.com. Brand new website, by the way. Join our email list. By joining each week, you can get announcements about the show, our blog, our free seminars, our newsletters, updates on the law, and a whole lot more. Of course, we do a blog every single Monday morning at hoa-condoblog.com. Again, hoa-condoblog.com. Tomorrow's topic, Florida's new emotional support animal laws, part 2. This is going to be, based upon what I learned yesterday, it's probably going to be a 4-part series.
No.
Because there is a bombshell opinion on all this out of the Iowa Supreme Court that I found out about yesterday from one of our listeners. And if that Iowa Supreme Court decision becomes law here in Florida, it's going to change the emotional support animal situation drastically.
Really?
Okay? So I just want to remind everybody that, remember, we've done about 500 columns on all kind of condo and HOA topics. They are now all searchable by topic. We've had repeated requests for that. We listened, we invested, and we did it. It's now really a great resource. So just go to either condo-laws.com or condocrazeandhoas.com. Go to our blog page. Search any topic you want. Just plug in a few words. Up comes the law, and really a fantastic research project. And before we start, I just want to thank everybody who came to our seminar this week in Palm Beach and in Orlando. This Tuesday will be in Broward at the Signature Grand. And to sign up, just go to our website, condocrazeandhoas.com. Karen, one funny story before we start. I don't know if it's funny or sad, but yesterday I saw a meme on Facebook, and I thought it was funny. It was a picture of, you know, the Goodfella guys laughing. You know that one?
Yes.
The guys from Goodfellas laughing.
Yes.
And the verbiage around it, the words around it says, they're laughing about Trump took out ISIS, but Biden took out Dr. Seuss and Mr. Potato Head.
Oh, right? I think I've seen that one. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so I thought it was funny. So I posted it, right? No sooner than 5 minutes after I posted, right, I get from the Facebook police, they put something over my post that says my post was missing context. and you click on it, and I'm like, why would they say my post is missing context? What are they saying? I click on it, and it says, you ready for this?
What?
Joe Biden has not really killed Dr. Seuss. Can you believe that? Is that impossible to believe? Yes, while Trump did kill ISIS, Joe Biden really did not kill Dr. Seuss. So your post is taken out of context. Now, can you believe you can't even tell a joke anymore on Facebook?
I think that speaks to what they think of the masses, how dumb they think they are, that they have to explain a joke to them.
This to me is scary, and you got to wonder, did they put the same missing context document or sticker, whatever you want to call it, on anybody that posted that Trump was a Russian spy for 3 years?
No.
No,
they won Pulitzers.
Go over it. Yeah, yesterday was pretty wild. They had to tell the audience that my meme was wrong because Joe Biden really didn't actually kill Dr. Seuss. What can you say? If you know, it's because it's getting to a point where they're going to control everything you see, hear, you know, speak about. It's going to be controlled by the press. And if that didn't prove it, you know, yesterday certainly proved it for me. It was pretty scary, to tell you the truth.
I think it's
pretty
sad. Wild. It's very sad. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow. Well, I think we need to clarify something else.
Yeah, we certainly do need to clarify some confusion because we spoke to people last week about the new law regarding opening up the pools and stuff.
Right.
And there is still some confusion. So I received lots of calls and lots of emails this week asking me that in light of this new law, must the association open the pool and the recreation area?
Mm-hmm.
And to be clear to everybody, the answer is still no.
Okay.
I want to recap the law really quick from last week. You know, so many associations have been scared to open their pool or their exercise room during the past year because they're concerned about the potential liability. They're concerned about people suing them, claiming they caught COVID as a result of the association's negligence.
Okay.
Well, last week we said they really don't have to worry too much about that any longer in Florida because there's a new standard, a new statute, which says absent at least gross negligence proven by clear and convincing evidence, the defendant here, which would be the association, is not liable for any act or omission related to a COVID-19 related claim, and the burden of proof is on the plaintiff to demonstrate that the defendant did not make a good faith effort to comply with authoritative or controlling government-issued health standards or guidance at the time the cause of action occurred. So the plaintiff here would have to prove at least gross negligence. And let me tell you, that is a really hard standard to prove. You know, good luck proving that.
Yeah, I mean, and you know what, Eric? It's even hard for the plaintiff to get in the courthouse door.
Exactly.
I mean, yeah, the new law says that at the same time the complaint is filed in court, the plaintiff must submit an affidavit signed by a physician actively licensed in the state, which attests to the physician's belief within a reasonable degree of medical certainty, whatever that is, that the plaintiff's COVID-19 related damages, injury, or death occurred as a result of the defendant's acts or omission. So you have to already have your witness testify before you can get into the courtroom.
Exactly. You got to have your expert testimony lined up before you actually file your case. And, you know, how many doctors are going to be able to say, yes, this plaintiff caught COVID-19 at this location and it was a result of that association's negligence?
Reasonable degree of medical. So how would you have like a swab from the deck of the pool that matches the DNA of your virus?
Did your patient go anywhere else in the last 2 weeks, right? Is it possible that they caught it from any other source?
Yeah.
Did they leave the house and go anywhere
else? Or, for that matter,
you know, bottom line,
did anyone in their family go anywhere else?
Right, or did anyone in the family, right, exactly. So, you know, it's difficult to sue an association in this regard. However, and this is what we want to caution associations, even with this new law, in order to avoid liability, the board still has to show that they made reasonable efforts to comply with the law, to comply with their county orders. So, for example, this new law doesn't let the association completely off the hook. They still have to ensure that social distancing was maintained in the pool. They have to ensure that the occupants wore masks, that the pool furniture was removed or spaced properly, that the surrounding areas were washed and cleaned. Now, even with this new law in place, the association must still make a reasonable effort to comply with these guidelines if they're going to avoid liability. That's
right.
The bottom line.
You know, I suppose the association has nobody who can check the pool a few times every day, nobody to clean the pool room a few times a day. I mean, what should the association do if they don't have people to do that?
Well, so in that case, and this is what we've been dealing with all week, the association did not make a good faith effort to comply, right? If they got nobody willing to do these things, then certainly they can't claim they made a good faith effort to comply. So even with this new law, they're required to have made some reasonable efforts. If they can't make those reasonable efforts to comply, bottom line, they shouldn't open the pool because this new statute will not protect them.
Yeah.
If someone claims they caught the coronavirus at the pool and they get a doctor to agree with them.
Well, I mean, isn't there a certain assumption of risk anytime?
Is there assumption of risk? Really not in this case. The bottom line, again, if they can prove the association did nothing, they completely ignored the guidelines, and they get sick, and they get a doctor to agree with them, even with this new statute, they're going to prevail because the condo can't prove at all that they made a good faith effort to comply with the guidelines.
Okay.
So, you know, the bottom line, you know, if you can't comply with the guidelines, if you can't make any effort, if your association's not willing to pay for somebody to, you know, clean every once in a while, then the bottom line, do not open, because you would still be subject to liability. But, you know, here we are. Everybody is now getting vaccinated. That's really wonderful to see. And, you know, hopefully we're in the home stretch and this nightmare will soon be in our rearview mirror.
Well,
and, of course, on that note, I wish all of you and your families only good health.
Well, it sounds like, you know, it's got a win-win situation there because it prevents frivolous lawsuits and it also keeps the condo or HOA, you know, on their toes in terms of making sure everything is being cleaned or something's being done. So there's like two good things.
And if they don't do anything, don't open it.
So there you go. And on to bigger and better news. We have a brand new Condo Craze and HOA's app for both Apple and Android users, which I'm one of those.
Yeah, we do, Karen. Came out this week. We redesigned our phone app.
Wow.
And it looks fantastic. Just go to the iTunes store or the Android app store and search for Condo Craze and HOA's. Download the app. You'll have access to all the Florida Association laws. You'll have access to our law firm's website, our Condo Craze radio show website. You can register for all of our seminars online. You can read our newsletters. You can send us emails and questions. You can listen to any past show.
Fantastic.
It's really a fantastic app. So no problem, by the way, if you can't tune in on a Sunday. You can catch the show usually the next day because it's posted on the website.
There you go.
And you can even read our blogs. It's all now in one new, big, bright, really colorful, great app. Please download us, download it, and we'd love to know what you guys think about it. And on that note, let's take our first break of the hour. And when we get back, let's hear what our listeners think about all this stuff. Give us a call about anything in the condo or HOA world, 877-850-8585. Again, 877-850-8585. 850-8585. We'll be back right after this.
Is your condominium or HOA in need of accounting services? Look no further. Gerstle, Rosen & Goldenberg is one of South Florida's largest accounting and auditing firms, as recognized by the South Florida Business Journal, and is one of the few accounting firms uniquely specialized to provide accounting services to their growing condominium and homeowner association clientele throughout Florida. With primary offices in Aventura and Boca Raton, satellite offices in Naples and Orlando, and a professional staff of 65, Gerstle, Rosen & Goldenberg is prepared to meet the needs of any condominium or HOA in the state. The professionals at Gerstle, Rosen & Goldenberg also have experience working with timeshares, cooperatives, hotel condominiums, mixed-use buildings, and ancillary operations like restaurants, spas, and country clubs. Put their 25 years experience in your corner. Gerstle, Rosen & Goldenberg, 305-937-0116. That's 305-937-0116 or grgcpa.com.
Ah, the finer things. Spectacular wine, exotic vacations, or just the time to enjoy the view from your condo? Affinity Management Services gives you time to enjoy them. We provide full-service community association management, including site, administrative, and financial services. We handle everything from complaints and collection of assessments to emergency services and maintenance, giving you more time. Fully accredited by the National Board of Certification for Community Association Managers, we promise service delivered with integrity and respect. And we're endorsed by the Better Business Bureau for our streamlined and professional approach to quality service. Join hundreds of board members across South Florida and call us today at 305-325-4243. Affinity Management Services, simplifying your life to make time for the finer things. 305-325-4243, AffinityManagementServices.com.
If your association has ever been through a major restoration or renovation project, you know it can be a complicated, expensive, and stressful undertaking. noise, dust, unexpected problems, and that C word no one wants to hear, change orders. But it doesn't have to be chaotic. DSS Condo is here to help you through the condo project management process. Most projects go over schedule and over budget. Without an expert, independent advocate in their corner, associations are exposed to cost overruns, low quality results, and long-term disruption for owners. DSS Condo is Florida's leading association project management firm. They provide tailored, expert construction management services for all types and sizes of association projects, helping you maintain control of the chaos. DSS Condo now offers customizable project management packages that can be modified to meet your association's needs and budget, and now services Miami, Broward, Palm Beach, and Collier counties. Contact DSS at 305-985-3772 or by visiting dsscondo.com. That's 305-985-3772.
HOAs here on A50 WFTL, Karen Curtis with attorney Eric Glazer. He specializes in community association law. He knows everything there is to know about HOAs and condos and whatever makes you crazy. And you can give him a call for free advice on a toll-free number, 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585. And he's on the phone because there's no power to 8 customers there in Hollywood, Florida, and he's one of them.
That's right. All right. How about we go to our first call of the day, John and Dania. How are you, John?
Yes, hi. Good morning, Karen. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning.
Two quick questions. I have an HOA and a condo, so if you could answer for both, Eric, please.
Yes.
Records request. How far back can I go when requesting records, or does it depend on the subject matter?
Okay, so new statute that came out about a year or two ago that said for both condos and HOAs, you got to maintain the official records generally for 7 years, right? There's some exceptions to that. The election records can be maintained for 1 year, okay? So generally all records 7 years, election records 1 year, and the declaration amendments, the bylaws and amendments, the articles of incorporation and the amendments and all the original plans given by the developer, and you ready for this one? All the minutes, everything I just named in that regard, from the beginning of time. Okay? So there's supposed to be a minute book that everybody has that has the minutes of every single board meeting you've ever had in your community from the beginning of time, a minute book that contains that. Yeah, you know, we know that associations don't have that. But by law, they're required to.
Okay, good. The other quick question I had was, and thank you, according to our bylaws, we have to have committees. So we have a ARC committee, Architecture Review Committee. We have a finding committee, Rules and Regulations Committee. They have not, and I found out recently that according to our bylaws, what they're supposed to do is the ARC or the finding committee gets together, and then they make a recommendation to the board, and the board at a meeting and with the agenda item then makes decisions in an open board meeting. Well, for at least the last 2 years, the last 3 years, none of this has happened. I just found out that the board or the committees are making decisions, and two of the committee members on the ARC committee, both happen to be board members, they're approving their own ARC proposals. What's
right?
A, I think that's illegal, and B, what's the penalty for that? What can I do about that?
So, after the ARC has made a finding, do they always take it to the board?
No, they've never taken it to the board.
Makes
the decision.
I got it.
It doesn't even tell them.
So, if your documents say that the ARC is simply an advisory committee to the board, so it's, you know, if they make a decision, if it's not upheld by the board of directors, then it means nothing. So then you cannot go after somebody for violating, you know, an ARC provision. For example, if somebody painted their house the wrong color and the ARC says they painted the house the wrong color, you know, we have to go after them. Well, not if your documents say the board takes the recommendation of the ARC and the board acts on it. If the ARC doesn't have final authority, you are 100% right. They don't have the, they can't do anything unless the board, you know, puts down the hammer and actually agrees with their decision.
So those decisions then could be reversed.
Absolutely.
Because the ARC is making the decisions, and nothing's going to the board. The board's not making any. The board's not addressing any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, absolutely. Occasionally, you'll get an attorney that knows what they're doing, right? And that attorney will look at the bylaws, and that attorney will say, "Hey, association, you didn't go through the process. Leave my client alone. Your board never affirmed the decisions of the committee. Therefore, it's as if nothing happened."
You know, I find it interesting, too. The bid, the board is getting some bids for repair of our wall and seal coating and other things. And at the meetings, they refuse to discuss the amount of the bids.
Hmm.
They refuse to
discuss
the amount.
Does that make sense?
Well, I can tell you this. Those bids are official records. That I can tell you.
Yes.
Those bids are official records. Once they're open, you can see them. So the next day, you can make a request to see them.
I've made a request for all that, and I will be in touch with your office this week because I've been out of town for 2.5-3 years, and I came back, and they're up to their usual shenanigans.
Well, I wish you luck, John. Always a good call. You know, as long as we're on that topic with John, I think it's so important that we discuss the fining process for a minute,
okay. Because
the fining process is oftentimes done wrong by associations, and I just want to make sure that associations are doing it right. So the bottom line is how it works with the fining process, assuming you have a fining committee. It starts off, like I told John, it starts off at the committee level and then is approved by the board. When it comes to the fining process, it's reversed. It's reversed. So, for example, let's say that you want to fine unit owner 105 because unit 105 has been parking his car in guest parking for the last 7 days.
Okay.
So on a board of directors meeting, on a board of directors agenda, again, starting at the board of directors, the association board levies the fine against the unit 105. So someone would make a motion. I move to fine 105, $100 a day for the 7 days that they parked in guest parking. Is there a second? Yes. All in favor, say aye. So the board has now voted to impose a $700 fine on unit 105. To levy a fine of $700. Is that fine in effect yet? No, it's not. The next step is to go to the fining committee made up of non-board members. Right, non-board members, and nobody related to or living with a board member. And that board has to give the offender, so Unit 105, it would have to give him 14 days' notice of a hearing. And at that hearing, that fining committee has one role and one role only, either approve or disapprove of the fine that was levied by the board of directors. Okay, so they're either, again, imposing the full $700 fine, or zero. They have absolutely no authority under the statute to mitigate it.
Again,
when it comes to fines, it starts at the board level and then goes to the committee level.
So what happens at the hearing, though? Since you have 14 days, can you undo what they're fining you for and then you won't be fined?
Well, yes, that's one of the things you'd want to do. You'd want to say, you know, I didn't realize I was...
Right.
I was in error. As soon as I understood it, I corrected it. I apologize. And, you know, you go to the fining committee, throw yourself on the sword, and hope that they reverse the fine, right?
Okay.
That's the strategy.
And, Eric, is that the same in condos and HOAs, what you just stated?
Yes, absolutely. Same in condos and HOAs.
Hey.
You start off at the board first, and then you go to the committee level. Okay? John, thanks for the call. We got to keep
great
going. How about Maria in Cedar Court, wherever that is?
Cedar Court?
Hi, Eric. It's Hollywood.
Oh, Hollywood.
Okay. This might be the name of your subdivision, I guess. Okay. How are you, Maria?
Cedar Court. I'm okay. I'm still pulling my hair out.
Uh-oh.
I wanted to ask you about...
I want to pull your hair out. Doesn't make sense. Okay, never mind. Go ahead.
The budget and going for a line of credit as opposed to being assessed, do they have to be, do we have to get 75% vote on that kind of thing?
It depends. Lot of documents, a lot of bylaws specifically say that if a board of directors want to borrow money, they need the approval of the community. Now, let me tell you, because I've done so many of these, before a bank will loan an association $1, they request from the association every time an opinion of counsel for the borrower, for the association, saying that the attorney has reviewed the association's governing documents, right, the declaration, the bylaws, and that the association has complied with all the requirements for the association to borrow money. Now, sometimes when an association comes to me and they want that letter, I'll be reviewing their documents, and lo and behold, there's a provision in there that says, wait a minute, we need a vote of the community. We need 50% plus one. Mm-hmm. We need two-thirds. We need 75%. And until you give me that vote, until you show me that vote, I can't write that letter to you for the bank that says you're able to borrow. You know, and that happens from time to time. So, yes, there might be a provision. I can tell you, usually there's not. Usually there's not. But sometimes there is.
Okay.
You know, now money is so cheap. Banks are loaning money between 3 and 4%. So I get why you would want to borrow money at this stage rather than pass huge special assessments. It kind of makes sense. But you got to be sure that your docs allow for it. You got to be really careful, Maria.
Yeah, because they're kind of hard to read. So we did have an attorney look at it, an attorney that's on board, and I guess it went through. So I didn't, you know, like I said, they're a little sometimes confusing to read these docs. So that, and also emails that we send out to board members, are they public notice to all the members on the property as well?
Are your emails to the board members, are they public record, are you saying?
Yeah, for, yes, the homeowner.
So if it's between, so there's case law that says if emails are by in between just the members of the board, and it stays in their personal email accounts, that those emails, just between themselves, no, would not be a public record. But I believe the ones from the unit owners themselves to the members of the board, yeah, that potentially could be accessible by other unit owners.
Okay. And one last question. For my own personal needs, because I get scared here, I'm signing every piece of paper that comes my way, and I don't know what I'm doing sometimes because it's difficult to understand these things that I'm not used to, especially when it comes to money. I mean, to protect myself personally, and I know I called your office about, you know, consultation. They said there was a fee. I didn't ask. I don't know if I'm allowed to ask on the phone. But in order to have, like, an attorney protect you regularly, like, does that, you know, constitute a contract between you and myself, for instance? Or
Well, you're on the board of directors, Maria, right?
Yes.
Okay, so, and you're saying you're signing all these documents, and, you know, sometimes you don't know what you're signing. That's exactly what your community association attorney is there for.
Right.
Don't sign a thing unless, you know, they're explaining it to you. They're telling you. You shouldn't need to go to independent counsel for that. That's something you should be able to talk to your association attorney for. Tell me what this contract is, you know, in front of me. Tell me why I'm signing this piece of paper. Tell me my risks about signing this piece of paper. Are there any?
Don't sign it and then call them up.
Concerned about? Yeah, I mean, that's what your attorney is there for. You certainly shouldn't be having to resort to independent counsel to find out whether or not you should be signing something. That should be something you and your attorney talk about, have a discussion about all the time. Maria, sorry to cut you off, but we got to take our bottom of the hour break. Running real late here. Taking your calls, everybody. 877-850-8585. 877-850-8585. We'll be back right after this.
Is your condominium starting to crumble? Are your balconies breaking down? Are pieces of concrete and stucco flying off your building, making the building look ugly and putting your residents at risk? Are you in need of your 40-year certification for your building? If so, you need Carousel Development and Restoration right away. Carousel is a concrete restoration company specializing in high-rise condominiums throughout South Florida. Whether you need balcony repairs, garage decks, full deck replacement, rail fabrication and installation, impact windows and doors, or painting and waterproofing, Carousel has you covered. After all, we're South Florida's largest locally owned structural restoration contractor and have been located in Delray since 1979. We know how tough it is to start projects in your condo. Where do you begin? You begin by calling the licensed and insured experts at Carousel Restoration for a free estimate. 561-272-3700. That's 561-272-3700.
Or visit the website cdri.net.
Are the roads, parking lots, and walkways in your community association in need of repair? DMI Paving and Seal Coating can help. DMI Paving and Seal Coating is the largest seal coating company in the United States, an industry leader for over 57 years in asphalt restoration, asphalt paving, parking lot striping and maintenance, concrete sidewalks, curbing, or ADA parking lot compliance. Let DMI Paving and Seal Coating pave the way and make your community look great. At DMI Paving and Seal Coating, they believe in well-trained personnel, top-quality equipment and materials, and friendly customer service. Customers include office building complexes, educational facilities, hospitals, hotel chains, apartment complexes, condominium and hotel associations, and the largest mall and big box retail companies in the country. DMI Paving and Seal Coating is a LEED accredited Green Advantage certified environmentally responsible full service asphalt paving contractor and seal coating expert. DMI Paving and Seal Coating serves the entire state of Florida and most of the southeastern United States. Call today for a free estimate, 800-432-1191. That's 800-432-1191. Or visit DMIPavingandSealCoating.com.
Why can't we be friends? Why can't we be friends? Why can't we be friends? Why can't we be friends?
All right, welcome back to Condo Craze and HOAs here on 850 WFTO. Yeah. It's our second half hour. Don't wait till the bitter end and then call in. Call in now so you can ask your question. Eric can answer it. Toll-free number. Anything about community association law, condos, HOAs, or co-ops, 877-850-8585.
Okay, just want to remind everybody, yes, it's breaking on Facebook. Joe Biden did not actually kill Dr. Seuss or Mr. Potato Head. Facebook is reminding me that based upon my post. Absolutely incredible. Okay, how about we go to Barry in Miami?
Yeah, hi, Eric. Regarding
Barry,
the 8-year board term, good, and you? Regarding the 8-year board term limit, which looks like it's going to pass and be the clock start ticking on July 1st, 2018, so it really wouldn't take effect until July 1st of 2026.
You are correct.
I assume you think that's just an absolutely horrible provision.
It's ridiculous. Okay, so let's remind our listeners what you're talking about. So there was a law passed in 2018 that basically said if you served on a condo board for 8 consecutive years in a row, that if you want to continue to serve, you can run, but in order to get on the board, you'd have to have either no competition, right, so you get on automatically, or if you run, you have to get 60% of the vote, at least 60% of the people that voted have to vote for you. So the question was, well, wait a minute, when does this new law go into effect? Does it go into effect July 1st, 2018, and you count all the years prior? In other words, if on July 1st, 2018, you've already served your 8 years, does the law take effect then? Or is it, you know, just perspective going forward and we only count the years starting on July 1st, 2018? Well, long story short, I always said you start the prior 8 years. And sure enough, an arbitrator and a declaratory statement came out that said, yes, you count the prior 8 years. Well, there's a bill pending in the legislature, and it looks like it's going to pass, that's going to change all that. And the first year that's going to count is going to be July 1st, 2018. And so like Barry says, you're not going to have to even think about this law until July 1st, 2026. So Barry, do I think it's ridiculous? Of course I think it's ridiculous. When the legislature passed this law in 2018, Of course they intended it to become effective immediately. They don't pass a law now intending that it become effective 8 years from now. So, again, this is, to me, you know, a ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous provision of the law that's about to change. But it looks like it's about to change, no question about it. So we're going to put this law on the shelf. We're not going to have to talk about it until 2026, like you say. And at that time, I'll remind everybody about the eight-year term limit. But thanks for the call.
So
how do you feel about it, Barry?
Can we? Well, I obviously think that the CAI attorneys, you know, people who have been on the board for maybe 10 years were instrumental in hiring the law firms. And,
right,
you know, there's lots of reasons why this bad law is going to be go into existence. But suppose I have Kaufman language. And the board members, the majority of the board members and the unit owners think it's a horrible bill. They haven't had documents rewritten in 20 years.
Yep.
Can I amend my Kaufman language to exclude the eight-year term limit and also amend my declaration to put in an eight-year term limit with no exceptions, the two-thirds rule, the other rule?
Very good. I can tell you that the statutes allow for term limits if your documents, you know, call for term limits. So you could amend your documents right now and call for term limits. After 8 years, you have to remain off the board for 1 year or whatever it may be. Yes, term limits in both condos and HOAs have been held to be perfectly legal if that's what the people in your community want. So,
okay, last question.
If you want to give that a shot, you can get it passed.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Barry.
Can I specifically exclude from my Kaufman language, amend it to carve out this new?
No, I don't think you can do that. I don't think you'd be able to carve out this exception. In other words, the people in your community would say, nope, I'm entitled to run. The eight-year thing, you know, doesn't apply to me. You can't adopt Kaufman language and specifically exclude certain statutes. But you can, if you wanted to, pass term limits amendments to your governing documents. So, you know, that's always been allowed. But I don't think you can do carve-outs, Kaufman language, but with certain carve-outs. I don't think that would be allowed under the law. Barry, thank you for the call.
Okay, thank you very much.
Made us think about a lot this morning. Right. Much appreciated. How about we go to Lewis and Boynton?
Hello?
Lewis and Boynton.
Oh, it's Lois.
Hello, who do we got? Whoever we got.
It's Lois.
Okay.
Oh, Lois.
Okay. Yes.
I'm sorry, I got a Lewis.
I'm in an HOA. I'm the head of the compliance committee. When a complaint is registered, the community director tries to solve it, and if she can't, it escalates to the compliance committee. We have a situation where on a go-to meeting, one of the members of the ACC defamed her chairperson online with 60-some-odd people listening. And what the complainant is, he felt that she slandered him. And what he's asking for is a public apology at the next board meeting, and she refuses to do it. So okay. It's going to be escalated to the compliance committee. Where do we go from there?
Well, so let me ask you this. Before your compliance committee comes down and issues any penalties against this alleged slanderer, do you have any specific rules that are in effect that talk about or that mention how someone is to speak on a Zoom call, how people are to conduct themselves at meetings? Has that been adopted as part of your rules or part of your documents?
No, I think it's just an assumption that if people are working on a committee that they know how to behave. I mean, the issue that she was complaining about, and she called him a liar twice, you know, publicly, she had the information 2 days before because the agenda was given out 48 hours in advance.
Right.
So she
whatever it is you're complaining about the conduct of somebody during a phone call, right? That the person might have slandered another, and another person is saying, I want that person to get a penalty because of it. Well, if I'm charged with, you know, with this violation, I'm going to say, well, show me the law that I violated, right? Every criminal defendant, every time you're accused of something, you're entitled to know what rule you broke,
right?
So if there's nothing in your rules that suggests, you know, a specific rule that was broken, you said you're going on an assumption. You ever see the odd, everybody on Odd Couple fan?
It becomes a nuisance, doesn't it, when this...
that's a good argument.
I don't think one time becomes a nuisance. But if you're an Odd Couple fan out there, there's a funny, funny episode where Felix is in court and he says, you never assume, because by assuming you make an ass out of you and me. Anybody ever said
that? Out of you and me.
Really funny episode.
But I mean,
so don't assume. That's the bottom line.
You can call somebody a liar and not get sued for it.
Exactly.
On a public forum, he felt that he was slandered in front of all of these people who were listening.
Well, then let him
and in fact,
take it up
he
with
has
his attorney.
Proof. He has proof that he sent her what she was complaining about. He sent her an email, and she answered it.
So he has proof that...
Yeah.
I think that's something
I
that he should take up with
to the
his
compliance.
Attorney. If he was slandered, if she damaged his reputation in any way, let him take that up with his attorney. I don't think your committee should be in the business of getting involved in those types of disputes unless you have clear sets of guidelines, clear sets of rules that specifically discuss how you're supposed to act during board meetings, because you're going to get, you know, on a very slippery slope where when people engage in fights, you know, normal discussions about certain things, well, are they going to be accused of violating your policy? You know, you got to treat everybody the same. So if you don't have a policy in effect, a written policy that talks about how people are to act on the phone call, this is a private matter between two people. If he feels he was defamed, let him take it up on his own dime. On that note, Lois, we got to go to our final break of the hour.
Okay,
taking your calls, everybody. Don't wait till the last minute. 877-850-8585. Back right after this.
Need an insurance evaluation, audit, or quotation for your condo association or homeowners association? If so, then you need to speak with our insurance experts at Mack, Mack & Waltz. We insure over 800 associations, and we are the clear leader in this marketplace. Mack, Mack & Waltz has been in business since 1989. We write insurance on billions of dollars of property values. We are an independent insurance agency representing insurance companies which specialize in condo and HOA insurance. The staff at Mack, Mack & Waltz works closely with board members and property managers and regularly attends association meetings to help educate the association about their insurance policies. To learn more about how Mack, Mack & Waltz can save you money and improve your insurance program, call now 954-640-6225 and ask for Greg Waltz. 954-640-6225, Mack, Mack & Waltz Insurance Group. Let us protect your association.
Is your home or condo looking old, worn out, and in need of a fresh look? Then you need PD Painting to paint your property and make it look like new again. PD Painting will first properly prepare your home and condo and then use only the highest quality paint products. After many years in the painting industry, PD Painting has achieved a reputation for always delivering a reliable and professional finish. PD Painting is fully licensed and insured and offers a 7 to 10 year warranty. Their technicians are expert craftsmen. Let PD Painting handle all the details and then sit back and watch them restore your property and bring back that brand new look and feel. Need a service call? PD Painting will be there on the spot. Need financing? PD Painting can offer that too. Call PD Painting at 888-416-3204. Again, that's 888-416-3204. Go to the website, pdpaintinginc.com. Need painting done in your home and community? Contact the experts at PD Painting.
Someday, you will need insurance. And for that day, you'll be glad you wrote down Insurco Insurance and Financial Services. Why? Because Insurco virtually insures everything. They're a full-line insurance agency that'll put together the best possible coverage and premium for almost anything. Need homeowners or condo insurance? Call Insurco. Need auto or motorcycle insurance? Call Insurco. How about golf cart insurance or trailer and RV insurance? Just call Insurco for a free quote. They're open every day. From renter's insurance, officer's and director's insurance, and and personal liability umbrellas to all types of business insurance, boat insurance, cancer policies, life, health, and annuities. All you need is InsureCo. Get a free quote. They service Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach. Speak English and Spanish. InsureCo Insurance and Financial Services. It's the only name you need. Office at 14401 West Sunrise Boulevard in Sunrise, inside Edmore Chevrolet.
Call 954-846-1206. 954-846-1206. That's 954-846-1206.
Why can't we be friends? Why can't we be friends? Why can't we be friends? Why can't we be friends?
Welcome back to Conda Craze and HOAs here on 850 WFTL. This is our final segment, so call now. Don't wait to the very end to ask Eric a question about anything condo or HOA related. Whether you're just someone who lives in a condo or HOA, or you're on the board, or you're thinking about running, again, give him a call, 877-850-8585. He's the expert on everything community association.
All right, how about we go to Manny in Fort Lauderdale. How are you, Manny?
Hey, good morning, guys. Karen, Eric, thank you for doing this. Love your show.
Thank you. Sure thing.
It's a two-part question, Eric, related together. First part is, I'm at the point, I served on a board for 3 years at a problem condo association, and I'm at the point where, unfortunately, due to some physical problems with the buildings, some water intrusions, unsealed windows, we have some mold in plenty of units, of which one is mine. During my tenure on the board, I took two restoration companies to give bids and conclusions and reports, and they both concluded the same thing. Yes, there are mold in these units. Yes, they came from cracks or windows not being sealed. The board is refusing to act. I'm no longer on the board, and the remaining board, as well as the old board, is refusing. I was the black sheep, and so they're refusing to fix and do anything about it. Here's my question. Should I file a complaint with the DPVR first, as far as not keeping covenants and taking care of common areas, et cetera? Or, in the second part of the question, should I come see your office as a possible arbitration to be filed against them? And really, the last part is, can you describe what that process is like for a homeowner to hire an attorney? How much out-of-pocket are we expected? Can you just give me an insight as to
What's their basis for not making the repair? Are they claiming they're not responsible for the repair? Well, they just don't want to do it.
Yes, and I've even gotten association at the time counsel to go ahead and opinionate that water intrusion usually affecting common areas is the association responsibility as per our documents. I think this is just like most boards, a little bit ignorant, a little bit hesitant to want to fix something, et cetera.
Okay, because it's very common for unit owners and board members to fight about who is responsible for what. So in that type of a situation, it goes to arbitration first. Okay? Now, arbitration you can't go to unless you first sent the association a warning letter saying, in this instance, hey, we understand that there's mold. We believe it's your responsibility, association, to fix because you failed to waterproof the building or you failed to timely repair certain leaks, and it's a common element that has the mold, so therefore it's totally on you to fix it. Okay, please fix it. And if they write back, and you can give them 7 days, let's say, to at least start doing it. If not, we're going to arbitration. If they do nothing, right, or if they say it's not our responsibility, now you can start off in arbitration. Okay. Now it's different if they're not denying that it's their job to do. They're not denying it, but they're just not doing it. Then you'd have to go off to court. Okay. So you have to make sure, are they denying liability for it? If they're denying liability because it's not their problem, then you want to start off an arbitration. So how does arbitration work? Like I said, you give them that warning letter first. Then we do what's called an arbitration petition. It's kind of like a lawsuit, alleging all the things that the association is doing wrong. We send that off to Tallahassee. It gets assigned to an arbitrator at the Bureau of Condominiums, right, at the Florida Department of Business and Professional Regulation. The arbitrator looks at it and says, okay, basically, does this pass the smell test? you know, has the plaintiff in this case pled a cause of action that's reviewable by an arbitrator in Florida? And assuming that you have, then the arbitrator enters an order giving the association 20 days to respond to the petition for arbitration. He sends them off a big package showing the copy of your petition that you filed, a copy of all the rules, and an order saying you have 20 days to respond. And then after the 20 days, they file a response, and the arbitrator ultimately decides who's responsible for what. And the loser in that situation is definitely going to pay the other side's attorney's fees, that I could tell you. An arbitration usually takes, let's say, somewhere in the neighborhood of 60 days. Could be longer.
Great. And as a follow-up, you were great. Thank you for that. And just as a shortcut as a homeowner and wanting to do that instead of going solo, if I wanted to call an attorney such as your office, or just can you give me a general, what's that like to hire an attorney? Am I expected to pay out of pocket? Can you just
absolutely
give me a sense?
I can tell you, if you're going to go to our arbitration, the arbitration fees on average, I'm just going to give you a ballpark, are somewhere between 5 to 15 hours of time that you could expect at arbitration. And if you have an arbitrator that drags it out and requires numerous hearings and all kinds of memorandum of law and stuff like that, and even allows for discovery, there should be no discovery, but sometimes an arbitrator will allow for discovery, then it can be even more expensive than that. So, again, the loser pays the fees. So like I said, it's normally typically somewhere between 5 and 15 hours, maybe even less than that. But, that's a ballpark figure.
What if someone gets sick, Eric?
Hero. Thank you.
No problem. You know, yes, Karen, you raise a great point. Can someone get sick? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, here's the problem.
Mold.
When if they have already a notice from their attorney telling them that they're responsible for this, and they're ignoring it. Now, if someone was to get sick, right, you know, we teach this all the time, did those directors act with willful disregard for the life, health, or safety of the people in the condo? And there's a pretty good shot that you can make that argument that they did. They ignored mold in the community.
And that's like criminal, right?
The insurance company can say, we're not defending you right now.
Ooh.
If you're found to have acted with the intent to harm, you're not covered by that under insurance. That's going to be on you completely, and the insurance company could deny coverage completely. So when your own attorney tells you this is on you and there's mold and people could get sick, yet you better stop, drop, and fix the problem immediately. Or, like you said, if someone gets sick, guess what? There could be no coverage, and there could be a lawsuit against the directors in their individual capacity. So they should be real careful. How about we go to Naomi in Delray?
Hi, Naomi.
Naomi in Delray, going once.
Yes. I have a question for you. I'm aware that Homeowners Association have amended their documents to allow for capital contribution.
Yes.
Could a condominium do the same? Amend the documents
question.
To be able to.
So Naomi's question is, HOAs out there are amending their documents to say, we want a capital contribution. We want a sum of money from every buyer that moves into the community. Typically, it's somewhere between $500 and $2,000. So every new person that buys in, they have to pay, again, somewhere between $500 and $2,000. And Naomi wants to know if a condo can do the same thing. And I'm here to tell you, absolutely not.
Mm.
I can tell you, I defended a condo in a class action lawsuit that they were given some information that they were allowed to charge this capital contribution fee in a condo, and they couldn't. By the way, there is a federal court opinion right on point. Believe it or not, a federal court opinion. If you want it, just contact my office, anybody out there, and I'd be glad to share the opinion with you that says, what can a condo charge? Right now, the statute says when someone wants to move in, you can charge transfer fees. $100 per person that's moving in. A married couple is considered one person. That's the limit right now. That's it. That's all you can charge. So tacking on a capital contribution above that transfer fee, totally illegal, and it's a great question, Naomi.
Okay, my other question is, in the 718, when you do the stop, the questionnaire, what you charge, the stop letter, it says, is there a capital contribution, yes or no? So if it's illegal and it's not allowed,
it's a very interesting question that you raise. If they can't charge it, why is it asked for on the form? Well, I tried that argument. Let's just say it didn't work. all I'm telling you right now is there a federal court opinion on point that says a condominiums cannot charge a capital contribution. Okay?
Okay.
Naomi, we got one more call we got to take, and it's David in Delray. How about we go to David?
Thank you for taking my call. On a recreation corporation that's not covered by 718, if that corporation was dissolved and a new corporation started, would the new corporation be covered under 718?
Don't know. The only way for me to answer your question would have to see the governing documents of that community. You know, why would the first one expire, and what makes the second one have any authority over the homes? You know what I'm saying? I need to see that. Why did the second one expire?
No, the second one didn't expire.
The first one. Why did the first one expire?
The first one didn't expire, but if they wanted to dissolve that corporation and start a new corporation, would the new corporation then be under 718?
Because it didn't expire.
I have no idea if it would be 718, because you originally started by saying it's like a rec association, it's a master association. In order to be called a condo association, there's a lot of different things that they would have to meet. For example, they would have to have the right to lien and foreclose. Some questions it's impossible for me to answer without seeing the governing documents. This is one of those questions, Dave, so I'm sorry. And it may be an HOA under 720, or it may be neither, and it might be just fall under Florida Statute 617, which is a not-for-profit corporation. So there's no way for me to tell you that without doing really an examination of your documents. Sorry about that, Dave, but sometimes it's impossible to answer that questions without seeing the docs. And on that note, I think that brings us to just about the end, everybody. So I want to thank everybody for tuning in to another Sunday to Condo Craze and HOAs. Make sure to download our app. And, of course, if you need legal help off the air, you can give Blair and Sachs a call, 954-983-1112. Again, 954-983-1112.